Okay, where was I?
I don't know, Jay. Where were you?
Inflation was coming down.
All right. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 9th day of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, from a speech he gave this morning, Jay Powell and the future of this economy in 4.5 easy sentences. Number one.
We know that ongoing progress toward our 2% goal is not assured.
Two.
Inflation has given us a few head fakes along the way.
Three.
If it becomes appropriate to tighten policy further, we will not hesitate to do so.
Four.
We will continue to move carefully, however.
And a half.
Allowing us to address both the risk of being misled by a few good months of data and the risk of over-tightening.
All right, so look, here's what that was. That was the chairman of the Federal Reserve talking not to you or me, but to the markets, stocks, bonds, and otherwise, which, as we have been telling you since Powell's press conference last Wednesday, have decided somehow amongst themselves that the Fed is not only done raising rates, but it might even start cutting rates. Powell, as he said, is not fallen for the head fake. And indeed, on Wall Street today, having heard the chair, stocks down, bond yields up, details, numbers, you all know the drill. That head fake Chair Powell was talking about this morning was all about data. Data that lately has made it look pretty good for the Fed's done crowd, right? And the Fed does, to be clear, have a ton of data at its fingertips. We, though, are going to do a 180 here to something we don't have a lot of federal data on at all. I saw this in the Washington Post the other day, a headline that said, "Millions work in content creation in official records. They barely exist." Content creation, influencing, right, is a huge industry. So you might imagine my surprise that the feds don't really know all that much about it. Drew Harwell shared the byline on the piece in the Post. Drew, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Could you define a term for me, first of all, just so we all have a baseline here? Creator economy. What is that?
It is the business of online influencers. It's the people, many of them young, but not all, who use their phones and computers to make the content that fills our internet. And, you know, we used to sort of poo-poo them as just influencers, that they just did fashion and makeup, but they cover basically every genre now, and they are a giant industry in the U.S., the $250 billion industry that touches a lot of culture and politics and also just business.
And the reason we got a hold of you is because of this piece that you and your colleague Taylor Lorenz wrote, which basically says the government doesn't really know much about this industry, how big it is, what it does, who's in it, all of that.
Yeah, which I find really interesting because at this point, you know, Facebook is 20 years old, YouTube is old. This is a market of millions of people around the world who work as creators or influencers. And yet we don't really have a sense of how big this market is. We don't have any kinds of great labor protections for them in the U.S. And yet they really are a job. But also a lot of young people are seeing this as a career path. You have lots of young people who say, I don't want to be an astronaut or a rock star anymore. I want to become a YouTuber or a streamer. And I just find that really interesting. You have this huge market of young people wanting to become this thing that the government keeps zero track of.
We should point out here that although the high profile influencers obviously get all the high profile stuff, most people in this industry are not making $1 billion.
Yeah, it's a huge 1% economy.
Right.
You have the stars like, you know, Mr. Beast, who are at the upper crust, who make millions of dollars. And then there's a giant creator middle class that try and sort of professionalize it and sort of make it a career. There's a lot of also people on the flip side who pour a ton of blood and sweat and tears and time into it and basically stream to no one and get nothing out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very precarious job. It's a very demanding job. You're basically working for the internet, and the internet, you are very easily replaced.
That's a great way to put it, working for the internet, because, boy, that's brutal, I'll bet you, right? I mean...
Yeah, and you're working for these platforms that can change the algorithm sure. at any time, and so it's shifting sand.
Sure. Well, so look, so that actually gets to something else. With lack of government data comes lack of government regulation and oversight, and not that the government's going to tell companies how to run that algorithm, but one would imagine there would be some more kinds of protection for people who were giving this a go.
Yeah, I think back to Hollywood 100 years ago when we started to see child actors. Mm-hmm. There were laws passed, the Coogan laws, maybe one of the more famous ones, where it said, you know, young people who are under 18, the money they make from their work in, you know, motion pictures, some of that has to be saved into a trust that they can start using on their own when they become adults. That is a law that has been enshrined, you know, in the American code for 100 years. And we still don't have anything like that for child creators on a federal level, even though a lot of these young YouTubers, and you can see them if mm-hmm. you have kids like mm-hmm. I do, yep. are very young. And, you know, at the Washington level, nobody even really taking them seriously. I think that's it should be sort of a big labor issue we take seriously.
Right. Well, so there is the whole, hey, you kids get off my lawn thing, right? That you know, organized bureaucratic Washington is slow to change and slow to sort of get on the uptake of what's going on out there. Is there even a whisper of paying more attention to this, do you think?
It's interesting that you've seen some of this at the state level, some sort of proxies of the right. Coogan law, where it would be, you know, protections for young people. But these are, you know, a state here and there. At the federal level, there's just no conversation. And part of that, I think, is, like you said, this is frivolous stuff, right? This is right. TikTok and YouTube. Right. This is kids being silly on their phones. And it is that, but there is also, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans who see this as a job. And it's not just the people on the camera, but these are editors, writers, accountants. There's a whole sort of cottage industry that's grown up to support this. You know, if this is something people are going to be devoting their lives to, shouldn't they have that kind of baseline labor protection we've given to everybody else?
Drew Harwell at the Washington Post. Drew, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I got an email from HR a couple of weeks ago. Open enrollment's coming up, it said. Then I got an email from HR this past Monday. Open enrollment's here, it said. We here at Marketplace, like most people in this economy who have health coverage, get it through work. But in the past couple of years, a record number of people have been signing up for Affordable Care Act coverage through the federal or state marketplaces, in part because of more generous pandemic-era subsidies. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
More than 16 million people signed up for ACA coverage last year during open enrollment, a record.
One big change is the more generous premium subsidies that Congress enacted in 2021.
Matthew Fiedler at the Brookings Institution says Congress has since extended those higher pandemic-era subsidies through 2025.
The federal government has also been doing more marketing for healthcare.gov.
To get the word out so people know they can get help paying for insurance. Vivian Ho at Rice University says just about everyone looking for an ACA plan is eligible for a higher subsidy than before.
But in particular, there were increases in subsidies for families who were earning 400% of the federal poverty level or higher.
That's about $120,000 a year for a family of four. And she says previously,
those slightly higher income households did not receive any assistance from the federal government to purchase health insurance plans. So that provides another group of people who are able to afford health insurance.
For the coming year, 2024, Cynthia Cox at the health policy nonprofit KFF says there's another group that's likely to sign up for coverage in large numbers, people who've just lost Medicaid.
Millions of people have been disenrolled from Medicaid in the last several months because of the end of some pandemic era protections. Some of those people have found their way onto the ACA marketplaces, but we're expecting that many more will be coming on too.
Anyone shopping for an ACA plan this year might notice that premiums are going up by about 5%.
But even though the sticker price of the premium is going up, the subsidies are also changing.
So she says most people should be able to find a plan for about the same amount. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
First-time claims for unemployment benefits for the week ending November 4th were out this morning, down just slightly, suggesting that the labor market is, as of yet, ignoring Jay Powell. 6 months ago, we spoke to three then-new college graduates just entering that same labor market, and we're going to go back to them this week to see how things have been. Zoe Bennett is now an alum of the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, who moved to Rome, Georgia, to take a job as an environmental engineer at International Paper.
The move was really scary at first. Driving to a new city and getting the keys to a new house where I didn't know anyone was overwhelming. But slowly but surely, it's been pretty good. You know, I've established myself more and more as I've been here. I think the biggest challenge that I didn't anticipate was not having people know you, which sounds kind of silly, but especially in a new job where I'm trying really hard to establish myself and earn people's respect. But then people don't really know my personality, and I didn't really expect that would be something that I had to balance, and how lonely that would be for the first bit to feel like people don't really know who I am. I do talk to my friends about my experiences in Rome. However, it's kind of sad because going to work, I mean, 40 hours a week, usually more than 40 hours a week, that is a lot of focus that you spend towards one thing. And I remember as a kid sitting like at the kitchen table for what felt like years of my life as my parents would talk about work. And now I feel that happening to me because there's so many things that are consuming my mind all day at work. And then I'll try to talk to my friends about it. And a lot of times they'll bite. But then a lot of times I can feel myself just losing the crowd and I'm boring myself and I know it, but I just can't help it. I have a lot of friends and a lot of people my age doing very different things, living in different places. And there's a lot of expectations about, I think, what a post-grad life is supposed to look like. There isn't a right answer, obviously. And so I'm trying to just take it one day at a time. I think in 6 months or a year, I'm hoping that I'll feel similarly to how I do now, but just a little bit more confident, a little bit more established, and a little bit more secure in who I am and what I'm going to be doing.
Zoe Bennett, once upon a time of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, now living and working in Rome, Georgia. Coming up,
I'm giving it all I got.
And you'll be better for it, too. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 220 today, two-thirds of 1%, closed at 33,891. The NASDAQ down 128 points, 0.9%, ended things at 13,521. S&P 500 slid 35 points, 0.8%. 43.47 there. Krispy Kreme dropped 6.5% today after posting third quarter earnings that missed analyst expectations. Starbucks cooled 1.4%. JDE Peet's, owner of Peet's Coffee, steamed up about 0.25%. AMC Entertainment tumbled more than 13% today as the movie chain announced plans to sell up to $350 million worth of stock. AMC said the money would be used to boost liquidity and lower its indebtedness. Rival Cinemark gave back 0.8%. Cineplex, which, in case you didn't know, is Canada's biggest cinema chain, brightened 2.2% today. Disney grew 6.9% on better-than-expected adjusted earnings for the fiscal fourth quarter. The firm did say its streaming losses were decreasing, but still in the B with the billions range. Bond prices down. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.63%. This is the last time I'm going to say it this week. Financial conditions. And Jay Powell, bond yields up, markets down. Been talking about this all week. All right, we're done. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. The city of Albuquerque, New Mexico, has been experimenting with free mass transit. It used to cost $1 to ride the city bus, and then during the pandemic, when ridership in Albuquerque did what ridership everywhere did, which is to say disappeared, the city used federal relief money to fund a zero-fare program. Hop on, hop off, without paying a fare or swiping a transit pass. Richmond, Virginia, Kansas City, Missouri, Olympia, Washington, and others did the same. And now, with that federal relief money running out, cities are going to have to decide whether zero fare is worth the cost. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has that one.
Althea Atherton, an organizer with the Albuquerque Bus Riders Union, doesn't drive because of a medical condition.
I use the bus to get, you know, as many places as I can that the bus can take me.
In addition to the cost savings of zero fare, she says it makes the bus more efficient.
We're not waiting for everybody to pay their fare and put in their quarters and dig for their passes.
She says the bus should be treated like a public service. And the Albuquerque city councilors who voted to keep zero fare sort of agree. They say the city-run transit agency can just absorb the lost revenue, which is just 3% of the agency's total budget, because of the benefits for riders.
People with low incomes take transit a lot more when they have access to a free fare transit system.
And Yona Freemark with the Urban Institute says transit connects those people with jobs, housing, and social services. But as pandemic relief funding runs dry, he says cities have to think about whether they'll use tax revenue to make up the gap.
And more importantly, how they plan to ensure that the transit system is more effective than it used to be.
People prioritize reliability and frequency of service over affordability or free fare.
Sarah Kaufman with NYU's Rudin Center for Transportation says in many cases, investments in the quality of transit are more likely to boost ridership. Althea Atherton agrees cost is not the only factor.
My bus runs every 50 minutes, and so I am planning my day around that bus.
For folks who have a choice, she can see how a free ride isn't worth all that waiting around. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Having a desk of one's own is becoming more and more rare in the American workplace for those who go to a workplace. A survey out this week from Morgan Stanley finds about a third of office workers in the United States say their companies have introduced what's known as hot desking. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has that one.
The term hot desking is thought to stem from a military practice called hot racking, where service members working different hours might share the same bunk.
You don't have your own bed because you work in shifts and you just show up and sleep wherever anything's available. And yes, it is warm.
Dror Polig is author of the forthcoming book After Office. He says the idea is the same in the workplace.
So the desk remains warm because there's always somebody there.
These days, only about half the desks in offices are being used, according to Ronald Camden, one of the authors of that new report from Morgan Stanley. He actually spoke to me from a hot desk. And he says if employers can get workers to share the same desk, keeping it hot, so to speak, they could save money by using smaller offices.
They're going to see an opportunity for cost savings if they can sort of reduce their space.
Camden says companies could put those savings towards renting more desirable offices, say near public transit hubs. Also, hot desking lets employers see what areas of an office workers want to use. Again, author Dror Polig.
You can just see that, you know, some areas are avoided altogether. So you can ask yourself, wait, why aren't people going here? Does it smell? Is it too hot? Is it too bright?
Hot desking means people only have some control over where they work. They might end up in a noisy section of the office when they want to concentrate. They also have to schlep everything they might need with them. Laptops, files, snacks. And they might be far away from their close colleagues. Manju Adikesavan has researched hot desking as a PhD candidate at CUNY.
People really struggle if they don't have their teamwork or close at hand, and it actually defeats the purpose of being in an office.
She says some employers divide up flexible workspace by team, so a close colleague is more likely to be one hot desk over. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
You want to go to school, but you don't want to struggle to read and analyze some tiresome novel or fight your way through some obtuse math problem. You want to do something. You want to make something. Maybe weave a basket or build a piece of furniture. That's the premise behind folk schools, which teach traditional crafts to students of all ages, blacksmithing to boat building, fiber arts to jewelry making. Minnesota Public Radio's Dan Crocker reports.
The North House Folk School in the tiny town of Grand Marais, Minnesota, along the rocky shore of Lake Superior, is busy with all kinds of classes this season. In an old fish processing warehouse that's been converted into a classroom, 15 students are learning how to tan deer hides.
I'm giving it all I got.
Retired Minneapolis school teacher Ron Munson uses a wooden tool to soften the fibers of a deer skin stretched over a frame. This is his first course at the folk school.
It's learning from others who've gone before and creating a team out of folks that don't know each other at all. Kindred spirits and those who want to enjoy and explore this has been phenomenal.
This hide tanning class is one of 350 courses that North House offers every year to about 3,000 students. The concept comes from Scandinavian folk schools started in the 19th century that emphasized hands-on learning for skills to use your entire life. Tom Healy co-founded the school in 1997.
I think we knew right away that we had a tiger by the tail, and since we opened the doors to North House, the phone has not stopped ringing.
If anything, it's been ringing more since the pandemic. Executive Director Greg Wright says people increasingly want experiences working with their hands instead of staring at their screens.
You know, the world is high tech, low touch. We're the counter balance to that. High touch, low tech.
He says it's not that folk schools don't use technology or tools.
So it's about connecting the past and the present and the future.
There are now more than 60 folk schools around the country, including several that have opened elsewhere in Minnesota in the past decade. The Duluth Folk School, a couple hours south of Grand Marais, offers classes that teach traditional crafts as well as skills for modern life. Sarah Erickson is the executive director.
Everything from canning your own food. There was just a pitch writing class, how to tell your story in 500 words, which is a life skill now, like represent yourself on social, making a drying rack, making bread.
The folk school in Duluth is growing, and so is North House in Grand Marais. It's even recruiting former students to help with an expansion. The school is in the middle of a $5 million campaign to expand its campus and offer more space for students and instructors. This fall, dozens of folk school alumni came back to help build a new welcome center. They're using a traditional building method known as timber framing. It's a process where they cut joints into huge white pine beams and then interlock them together like puzzle pieces, no screws required.
People are immediately passionate about it. It's just elegant and beautiful.
Martha Williams is a retired yoga teacher who took one of the school's very first timber framing classes 25 years ago. Now she helps teach classes at the school.
I do think that right now people are really craving making things that are real, making things with their hands.
And she says being together with other people in that process. In Grand Marais, Minnesota, I'm Dan Crocker for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, saw this morning on Axios. You know how we talk about consumer spending all the time and how important it is? I mean, of course you do, because we talk about it all the time. Anyway, where do you think all of that spending is coming from? What slice of this population? Turns out, and this is data from Bank of America, it's not exactly old people, but shall we say, seniors or people close to it, people born before 1965 are the only segment of American consumers increasing their spending in year-over-year terms. Lots of reasons why. They've often got more diverse income streams, and also they're already in the housing market, right? So they're not all that interest rate sensitive either. Marketplace. That's us. Here's your moment of economic context as we go, which comes with our periodic reminder that immigration is fundamentally a labor market story. The Census Bureau said today U.S. population is probably going to stop growing by 2080, shrink just a bit by the end of the century. Declining birth rates, higher death rates, and less immigration. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Petra, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawi is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.